Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota, on an overcast day. Today is July 25th, and the year is 2018. I did it again. I double booked for my show today, but let me tell you, the friend that I had all lined up, we were outside chit-chatting. Name is Greg Klusser. He's the CEO at AllFlex. But he's going to talk about something that is very interesting that I discovered about 2 weeks ago. And I asked him to be in. He had a fishing trip, and so we scheduled for today. And then I forgot that I had scheduled somebody from Nicaragua. And we're going to talk about what's going on in Nicaragua. I have those two gentlemen in studio right now. So I want to apologize again to Greg Klusser because I'm embarrassed a little bit. But I guess there's an article in today's Northfield News about what we were going to be talking about a couple of weeks ago. So we'll get to him next week on the Wayne Eddy Affair. But right now, we're going to concentrate on a couple of individuals that are in studio. And one of them's been John Curry. You've been here before, haven't you? Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you brought along a friend this morning that has to leave at 10 o'clock. Why don't you introduce him?
Sure. Well, this is Chris Cruz, who I work with and is a friend from Nicaragua. And he's traveling back there today, and he obviously has a lot of experience. We both work for Interfaith Service to Latin America, so that's what we've been on your program before about. But it's obviously a time, some people may have heard, in Nicaragua where there's a lot of political unrest and a lot of things happening that have been pretty troublesome and pretty challenging for a lot of people. And Chris knows, of course, he's got to go back to see some of that, and he's seen some before he came here. But
well, Chris Cruz, you have a situation where you have to be at the airport this morning.
Yep.
Are you on your way back to Nicaragua?
I am.
And how long have you been in country?
Been here for a few weeks now.
Okay. Yep. Well, a friend of mine, Don Pavic, you guys know him,
yep,
right? Suggested, John, that I have you come on in, and also you're kind of a bonus, Chris, because you're here. But here's what happened when I got the confusion on setting things up. We weren't quite sure, John, whether or not Chris was going to be here.
Correct.
And I probably said, well, let's do it anyhow, and then didn't write it down. And then I got my gentleman friend from AllFlex to come in. So we're over that. Let's get down to business right now. Chris Cruz, I had an uncle that was a priest, and he taught at a private military academy. And they would have people come in from Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a roommate from Iceland, just to kind of give you an idea of the geographical makeup of the student body. And the fellow from Nicaragua, I think, I don't know if I can gonna remember his name, but it was Irish. His last name was, I think, like Kelly from Nicaragua. And I thought, well, but evidently, a lot of Irish people had migrated to South America. But Nicaragua, from when I was a young man, was a beautiful place to go with fantastic beaches and
yep,
wonderful, warm people. And
that's true. Still is.
And moving ahead as far as the economy goes. This is back in the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
And,
okay.
And so when I was talking to John Kerr over here, he mentioned that there's a lot of unrest in Nicaragua. I, of course, was somewhat aware of that because of I'm a news hound. And to have you seated here today to tell us what's going on in Nicaragua is a real bonus for our listeners this morning. So thank you for coming.
Yep, okay.
And you have to leave at 10. So we'll get going right away here. But first I have to say, the Quarterback Club in Northfield is the place to go for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you can also order on the phone and pick it up. And I was there last night, and I had some dinner. He had a hamburger. I had their chicken. I love their chicken. And then we ran into a couple that was there having their dinner. And it's just a great, friendly place. And we're talking about the Quarterback Club, which is locally owned, locally operated, on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, Minnesota. Okay, Chris, it's your turn. What is going on in Nicaragua? First of all, how old are you?
I'm 43 now.
At 43.
Turned 43.
Yeah, you look about couple 30, weeks ago. You know. You're looking good, man. And what do you do in Nicaragua?
I am a school teacher.
Okay.
I teach part-time now, but I did taught for a few years in high school.
Okay.
And I also grew up in a farm, so I do some farming too.
All right.
Now I'm working for Isla.
How did you get connected to Interface?
That was back in 1996,
a long
I
time.
Think.
Yep. Yeah.
My brother, Ramon, used to translate for the teams that came down. And that's how I met people from Preston, Minnesota, that helped. My brother came up here first through a university program, exchange student program. And then I came with the same program.
Well, what's going on in Nicaragua right now that has dire consequences for some of the population?
Yeah, it's really bad right now. A lot of political unrest, like John said. That's been going on for 4 months now. It started back in April 18, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started with a reform to the Social Security.
Cutbacks.
And then.
Is that Social Security as we know it here in the United States, where you take 7.5% of your earnings and send it to the federal government?
Somewhat similar. Similar. It's government employees, pretty much the only ones who get it. But yes.
What was the Reformation? What did they do that caused unrest in that regard?
They wanted to add more taxes. 5% more, I think, to the taxpayers. And also to
businesses.
Yeah, to businesses and the older people that usually get a pension, they don't pay out of that pension, and they wanted them to pay that 5% too.
So, and let's see if I got it right. The everyday working person was going to be taxed an increase of 5%, and that money is going to be given to government employees.
They are government. They're retired government employees, but the government was basically going to take more money out of their checks and also out of the businesses' side paying for it. And I think, just to interpret it a little bit more, it was a long-term thing. There was a lot of suggestion of corruption, that the money had disappeared in the government side and that they were making it up off the backs of poor people, of old senior citizens and people.
Okay, so they wanted to raise the tax and lower the benefits.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, and that infected everybody, not just the government employees.
No, everybody.
Everybody. Most of the Social Security people there are former government employees. Not all, but most.
Okay. Yeah. So what do people do to protest? What has gone on?
First, the Social Security, the elder people started to they didn't like what was going on, so they went out to the street to protest. And some of them got hit, by Ortega supporters.
They were attacked.
Yeah, they were attacked. So the students or the rest of the population didn't like that. So students joined the protest, university students. And that was growing and growing, and, like the whole country is protesting now.
So no, if I repeat what you just said, it's so I can better understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have retired Nicaraguan government employees mm-hmm. who are not happy with the fact that the money has been mishandled. You have businesses that have this increase in tax, and they're not happy with that because the benefit isn't going to the senior citizens that are retired. So they go out in the streets, so you got a bunch of graybeards or older people that are yeah. marching around with their signs and saying it's unfair.
Yep.
And then the youth of Nicaragua say, hey, you know what, they're right. These old people deserve what they earned, and so let's join that protest. So then the government reacted to that by attacking the students and the senior citizens?
Basically,
okay.
Yep.
Now, when they attack, are they attacking with billy clubs? Are they attacking with firearms? Or are they attacking with shouting? Are they using horses and pushing people back? Tell me everything.
Yeah, well, you know, now it's really bad. They are killing the people with real bullets.
All of the above.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, say that 350 people have got killed so far.
Wow. Now, how do they do that? How do they kill these people?
Well, you know, like 2 months ago, they started killing people just because they were protesting. They would, sniper shooters would climb up in houses and just shoot people because they didn't like them protesting.
There is a lot of dispute, to be fair. Yeah. The government says it's not us, but there's been a lot of videotape. I mean, everybody's got a cell phone now, and
yeah.
there's lots of pictures of these guys. There's guys wearing black hoods, usually, or wearing ski masks.
Yeah.
You can imagine the tropics, but they're wearing ski masks to cover their identity, carrying AK-47s and heavy machinery weapons that no one can figure out how they would get it if not from the government. And they're often be side by side with national police in a lot of these videos. And most of the international human rights organizations, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, all these other groups have also agreed that the government is behind it all. But the government denies it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the similarity to here in America would be the protesters that wear the ski masks and throw rocks and break windows and hit people, and nobody knows who they are. Some say they're this, so that, you know, let's say that I want to blame you, so I'm wearing the mask, and I tell, my name is John Kerr. And
wasn't me.
Yeah, and I and you don't really know who they are sometimes. But did you ever get videos of people being attacked head to head, face to face, gunshots or billy clubs or things like that?
There's videos all over, you know, Facebook and the social media, and that's happening mostly in the cities, you know, Managua and Masaya, the bigger cities in Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm. But you experienced the other thing that happened then, and you could talk about, Chris, is a lot of the students then and the protesters decided in reaction to the violence that they saw or the way they thought that to protest back was to form roadblocks or tranquis, they call them.
What do they call them?
Tranquis. In Spanish,
okay.
And they, but they're basically roadblocks that would be on the major roads and in towns.
Kind of like they did in St. Paul, when Black Lives Matter,
yeah,
and they shut down the freeway?
Yeah, sort of, yeah, but these are like permanent. They do this, they set them up for regular checks because they both wanted to, they probably did want to stop commerce to make their protest effect, but then also because these paramilitary groups, as they call them, with the weapons, were coming in and just shooting up neighborhoods where they thought that protesters were from. And so they block off the streets to stop them from driving in their pickup trucks. And so Chris experienced a number of that, those roadblocks.
What did they block the streets with, Chris?
Usually paving blocks.
Oh,
they would
professional.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Take him and just kind of make a pile of them and more, you know. That was scary too.
where do you live?
I live back up north, the Jalapa. That's few miles from the border with Honduras.
No, there were people from Northfield that went to Jalapa that built schoolhouses, if I recall correctly.
Yes,
And they had a wonderful experience, and there wasn't any unrest.
No, no.
At the time that I learned about this 4 years ago or so.
Yeah.
But you saying that this is generally happening in the larger cities, like how big is Managua?
Managua is pretty big. A couple
million?
At least
couple
2 millions.
Millions.
Oh, okay.
2 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You ever spend any time there?
Not very much.
Okay.
I just come there for airplanes or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how does that affect your region of the country?
Well, like John was saying, you know, the roadblocks were on our way, on the way to Jalapa.
Okay.
Halfway. So we were not getting groceries, for example, or gas. You know, it would take 2 or 3 days for the trucks to get to Jalapa because of the roadblocks. So that was...
Well, there was a way to get in, but you had to go around it or something?
No, I mean, they will let you go through, like, in every 10 hours or every...
Yeah.
And who is they?
The protesters.
Who also were. Masks.
Okay, so you got masked men and women fighting each other, and nobody knows who's fighting whom. It isn't like the Civil War here in America where you had blue and gray and you knew who your enemy was, or the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
not as clearly, although I think Nicaraguans knew who was who, pretty much.
Well, let's find out about the political situation there, other than the Social Security, about the people that hold power, after we take a break, all right? My guests this morning on KYMN Radio, John Kerr and Chris Cruz, we're talking about the unrest that is going on right now in Nicaragua. Nicaragua. And I push a button, and let's see what happens here.
Hey, season is safe season.
That didn't work.
John Beer.
Okay, let's try it again here. I want to go to the Dakota County Fair.
Join your friends at the Dakota County Fair, August 6th through the 12th at the Dakota County Fairgrounds in Farmington. 3 demolition derbies, bull riding, barrel racing, music from Johnny Holm, Good for Gary, and more. Kids will love all the farm animals and gigantic midway. New this year, the 7 Keys, 7 Days Grand Prize Giveaway, with your chance to win valuable prizes. All at the Dakota County Fair.
Hay season is save season at John Deere. For a limited time, enjoy extra savings on select John Deere mower conditioners and round balers. Pay a visit to your local John Deere dealer to learn just how much you can save on these hard-working hay tools. And get high performance at a low cost season after season. Offer ends October 26, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. See your John Deere dealer for qualifying products and complete details.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, July 28th, because the Vintage Band Festival is back. This outdoor event will take place on Bridge Square in Northfield from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and includes over 10 bands. This fun day includes vintage brass bands and mariachi bands composed of award-winning musicians from across the state and country. There will be food available from the Cannon Valley Lions Club Traveling Kitchen and Maria's Taco Hut. Bring your lawn chairs or blankets to the Vintage Band Festival on Saturday, July 28th. It's free and fun for the whole family.
We're back live in color on our KYMN Radio special program as we're speaking with Chris Cruz, who's a native of Nicaragua. As a matter of fact, he has to leave here at 10 o'clock to catch an airplane back to his country. And one of the things that I want you to do, Chris, if you will, or John, and that is give us a brief geographical lesson. We all know where Mexico is, and Nicaragua is located where in South America?
And it's in Central America.
Okay.
It's Mexico, then Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're not on the sea. You're not on water.
Not where I live, but Managua, and there's the Pacific and the Atlantic coast.
Yeah, they have ocean on
both
sides.
Yeah, oceans both sides.
Now,
we're between Honduras and Costa Rica.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, this is going to be a weird question, do you have any distaste for America, United States? You know, there seems to be a lot of the problems in regards to immigration and et cetera. And Honduras is one of the places that come through Mexico and try to get in the United States or do get in.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and immigration is getting tough everywhere. And people wants to come up here. There are more possibilities, but this is getting tough here too. But, you know, I guess the U.S. have provided home for people from different parts of the world. And maybe there's, I don't know how many, I guess there's millions of Mexicans and millions of people from everywhere.
Well, does a person like yourself ever think, you know what, I'm going to seek asylum? Because there is murder and mayhem going mm-hmm. on, and that's one of the reasons you can come to the United States is because you fear for your family and yourself in regards to ski mask people shooting yeah. at you with AK-47s.
Oh, yeah. That's scary, yeah.
Yeah.
There's many countries like that now, mm-hmm. you know, and like Nicaragua now, people want to leave. You know, there's lines, big lines of people trying to get a passport to go to Costa Rica or the U.S. or somewhere else.
Anybody ever, any long lines to go to Europe, for example, or Asia?
Yeah, yeah, Spain. A lot of people are going to Spain now.
Mm-hmm. So do you have personal fear? You're getting on a plane this morning. Do you fear going back to Nicaragua?
Well, somehow, yes. Yeah. You know, it's not safe there. But I have to go back.
Are you a husband and a father?
Yeah. I have a wife and two kids.
Okay. Yeah. How old are your kids?
17 and 9 now.
And what yeah. about that 17-year-old? He would be in that student age. What's his attitude?
Yeah, you know, we were worried too. This is his last year in high school, so he might want to go to college next year. And that's, I don't know, you know, like in Managua, colleges are closed. There's no class now, no school, so they might lose the school year this year.
So if I landed in Managua and decided that I want to go roam the city, see the sights, Tommy Tourist, would there be a problem? Would I not see the better side of Nicaragua and Managua? Would I want to wear a bulletproof vest, or how bad is it?
Yeah, it is pretty bad. Yeah, I mean, there's no tourists in Nicaragua right now. Mm-hmm. So even the Nicaraguans, the locals, they are not in the street at night or whatever. You know, the paramilitaries are kind of around all the time.
Well, who are the bad guys? I mean, is Ortega the bad guy, or is it his opponents? Who's the leader of the band?
Well, I'll give Chris a break on that one a little.
Yeah.
It obviously depends on your opinion, but again, all the human rights organizations have definitely said, I mean, there's been bad atrocities committed by both sides. That's probably the reality.
And what are the sides?
Well, there is the protester side, but even that is a kind of a mix of people, because you get some that are kind of way out there, and then you get some business groups have been very involved in the protest. It's a very conservative element. The Catholic Church has been trying to be sort of a mediator, but they have spoken up on the side of the protesters a number of times and agreed that the protesters are being attacked by the government or through paramilitaries. And then there's even been some attacks on churches, and that came up in the interview recently that Ortega gave on Fox News. It was on, and Ortega denies again that it was the government involved at all, but there were literally videos and the priests affirming that they were being shot at in the churches, and there was, in one case, there was actually a Washington Post reporter trapped inside a church with people as they were being shot at, and two students died there. So there's definitely a lot of feeling that from the reports of the international human rights community that the government is in some ways at least accepting, if not supporting and arming these paramilitaries.
Now, when you say paramilitary, does that basically mean that they're not organized and run by the government? They are organized by themselves, and there are different cells or units?
That's the big question. I mean, there are definitely videos of them looking very organized, even to the point of wearing the same color shirts to identify each other, or white armbands to make sure they don't get shot by snipers, and riding along in trucks, right, even government-issued trucks on some occasions, and next to official police. There have been some videos that certainly make it look like they're very organized and working together directly with the National Police, which are under Ortega's command.
Okay, so we all go back, Chris, to the increase in taxes and the Social Security, and that's what they called the straw that broke the camel's back. What was going on before that in regards to the Ortega government? Can you speak on radio to me about your feelings in regards to your country's government and President Ortega?
Yeah, you know, a lot of things were going on before this Social Security thing.
Can you mention what they are?
Yeah, well, you know, the government was taking control of everything, number one. No freedom of speech, or no freedom of nothing. He was controlling everything, all the departments in Nicaragua.
The commerce and everything.
The commerce and everything.
And they changed the constitution so that Ortega could run again. There were term limits, but he changed the constitution so he could keep running.
Yeah, this is his. Yeah. He's been in office for 11 years now.
And his wife is the vice president.
Yeah.
Sounds like another country with the lady with all the shoes.
Argentina, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, not that one, but Manila.
Oh, Manila, the Philippines, yes. Yeah.
So, do they have children, and do they live in a palace? Do they make appearances on television spewing their information about why they're doing what they're doing, which irritates the citizens of Nicaragua?
They do have children. A few, I think, like six or so. Yeah, and all the money is in the family, you know. Like, all the television channels or whatever belong to them.
Almost all.
Yeah, almost all. Because they were repressing the press first. Like, okay, you say what we want you to say, or we will close your station. And then they would buy it from, you know.
And they'd actually pay for it, though.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Under pressure.
Make you sell. Yeah. They would make you sell.
With the feeling that they had backup, militarily speaking?
Yes.
So, I want to buy your TV station. I'll give you $1 million for it. And to see the guys in the masks behind me, they're going to make sure that you agree to this. Kind of. Yeah. Where did he come from? How did he get elected in the first place? You're 43 years old.
Yeah.
You would have been 32 years old when he came into office. You're educated. Yeah. And did you vote for him?
No, I didn't.
Who were the opposition?
There's a liberal party, you know. He was in power also back in the 80s, you know, because he fought Somoza, who was a dictator. So, being Somoza a dictator, the people were getting tired of that. So they gave Ortega a chance. And then because of him getting elected, we had a contra-revolution, you know. And
was that good?
No, that wasn't good.
So the bad guy was replaced by a bad guy?
That's what he's being compared now.
Okay.
Yeah, Somoza is Ortega now.
Whatever happened to Somoza?
Well, he got...
he eventually was assassinated. But
yeah.
In office or after
the
election?
No, after he left. He left. The revolution was in 1979, and it was a very popular revolution, widespread, and included, you know, cross-section of the country. The Sandinistas, who were named after kind of a hero of Nicaraguan history, came in, and they actually, in fairness to them, did do a number of good things. They, you know, did a literacy program. It was, you know, they actually taught people to read, had started school programs. They started a public health program that a whole lot of people that didn't have any resources at all under the previous dictatorship did get things. But it's it grew to a point where a lot of people now feel where, you know, great axiom that, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, that they start looking like the old guy. And particularly Daniel Ortega has forgotten about being a Sandinista and is now a Danielista, is the expression.
What do those words mean, Sandinista and Danielista?
Well, Sandinista, the movement being, it was named after Sandino, who was like the Robin Hood of Nicaragua, I always say.
How many
This
centuries?
Was back in the 1930s.
Okay. 1930s. Oh, 30s. Yeah. So it's been unrest almost all the time.
Yeah. It's been a long, long history, and I think we have to also talk about the U.S. role through this whole thing.
Well, I was going to say that you mentioned late 70s or 80s when Reagan became president of the United States, there were some things that were going on that the American people didn't know that were supporting
Ortega. Yeah, and No, they actually supported the Contras, who fought against the Sandinistas. I mean, to take the history back just a little real quickly, I mean, the U.S. has been involved in Nicaragua internal affairs probably literally since before our Civil War. There was a guy who went down there named William Walker, who actually set himself up as president for life and tried to reinstitute slavery and was going to bring Nicaragua and Central America into the United States as a giant slave state. And we don't hear anything about that now here, but they know that history in Central America and in Nicaragua. And that led then all the way into the 20th century, when we started sending down Marines at like four or five different occasions into Nicaragua to support whoever was president at the time and to serve the United Fruit Company and served American corporate interests. And so all that history happened, and we set up Somoza then to be the first long-term dictator there. There's a famous quote from FDR, of all people, that about Somoza. He said, he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was all that history that led then to the revolution eventually. And in 1979, this popular movement came to the front did try to do, as I said, a lot of good things, and did do a lot of good things. And until this spring, Nicaragua was one of the few Central American countries that had a growing economy and was much safer than any country in Central America. And you asked the question about walking down the street. I was a white guy. I walked down the streets of Managua all the time, in the daytime in most areas, and no problems at all. But it's very much behind the scenes, this unrest was building with a lot of people who felt like, along with these good things, there was a lot of suppression of personal freedoms and a lot of accumulation of power in a few hands that would look very much like the old dictator. And so that's, as Chris said, the comparison that's come out now. That
I'm going to take a break, and sure. Chris, when we get back, tell me and our listeners why Nicaragua is an important part of the world in regards to natural resources, etc. We'll be right back.
A home is probably the biggest purchase you'll ever make, and you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. Call me, State Farm agent Mark Quinnell. I not only offer homeowners insurance to protect your investment, but I can help with home loans too. No wonder more homeowners trust State Farm than any other insurance company. For information, call me, State Farm agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545. Providing insurance and financial services, loans are offered through State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Don't miss Crazy Days in downtown Northfield this Thursday. The Rare Pair will have fantastic bargains under the tent from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The Rare Pair will be closing at 4 on Wednesday in preparation for 30 to 75% off summer clearance merchandise. As always, they will be sponsoring the Hula Hoop contest at 2 o'clock. That's Crazy Days at the Rare Pair in downtown Northfield.
We're back live on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. Two guests in studio, one from Nicaragua, one from America, John Kerr, and Chris Cruz is from Nicaragua. And there's a lot of unrest going on out there, and down there, I should say. And the question I posed to Chris was, what is it about Nicaragua that the world wants? And What are the Tris is going to pass it on to John. Okay. I mean, are we talking fruit, gold, silver? Are we talking about mining, or what is the product that comes out of Nicaragua that helps the country and helps the economy on a worldwide basis?
Yeah. Well, there's gold mining too.
Okay.
A lot of coffee is being exported.
Okay.
Chris is a coffee farmer.
Yeah. Coffee and tobacco are kind of the biggest thing. And there's a lot of manufacturing, you know, U.S. are down there with kind of in Managua. They provide jobs for half of Managua. They manufacture clothing and
especially like what we call sweatshops.
Yeah.
Big free trade.
Free trade zones, yeah. And
now, do I understand it correctly? Could a big coffee corporation from America, tell me if I'm right about this, they can go down there and own land, grow coffee, mm-hmm. and then have the workers live on the property owned by the corporation, and their rent is taken out of their paycheck, and that's their life, is wake up, make coffee, go to bed, wake up, make coffee, go to bed, all under the direction of a great corporation from America that would have leadership, Caucasian businessmen and women run the whole show. Is that, am I getting that correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, there's big coffee farms like where I live. That's coffee is kind of the main thing up north. And there are, there is one huge, I say huge, like 500 acres of coffee.
That's big.
That's big, yeah. And that's how it started, you know, with a local farmer. And then more people were adding to that. I mean, now it's owned by an American. And that's what they have been doing, you know, buying the small ones, and they would let him keep their small house and live there, but they don't have the farm anymore. So,
yeah, I understand, and that happens in America
everywhere.
With farmers, particularly dairy, and that's capitalism, you know.
Yep.
Hey, I'll buy your cows and your mm-hmm. land, and then I'm going to, you know, be more efficient.
Yeah.
You are a coffee farmer. How many acres?
A small one.
Yeah, how many acres do you have?
No, I do like 10 acres of coffee.
Okay.
I have a 80 acres farm, but just 10 of coffee.
Well, of the 10 acres of coffee, who do you sell to?
Well, most of a small farmers just bring it into town and sell it to whoever pays you.
Okay, like
better.
Like you're part of a cooperative. Like,
yeah, but we yeah, that I'm part of a cooperative too down there.
What do you do with the other 70 acres?
I have a pasture for cattle.
Okay, so you raise
we
cattle?
Do, yeah.
How many head do you have?
Not very many.
Five, seven, 20?
Yeah, around 20.
Okay.
And we do a little bit of corn and beans, you know, for
the corn
survival.
Is for the cattle?
No, the corn is for our food, you
okay.
know, tortillas and
okay.
And we feed the everybody with the corn, the chickens and all the farm animals.
So you wake up in the morning, you're a former teacher, you have a wife and kids, and so do you go out and work the farm and have the people picking the coffee and feeding the cattle, and every day is life on a small farm?
Yeah. Yeah, that's get up early, milk a few cows by hand.
It
takes a long time.
Yeah.
Then do other things. And yeah, I like that.
Are you a leader in your community? What's the name of your town?
Jalapa.
Jalapa. I like that name. What does that mean?
Kind of a sandy area, isn't it?
Yeah, swampy. I can't remember.
Sandy, swampy area. So it's a river valley. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trying to spell it, but phonetically, Jalapa.
Jalapa, yeah. It's a
knock knock.
Jalapa.
Yeah.
Who's here?
Jalapa.
Yeah.
I love you. I'm sorry. 18 minutes That's before 10 o'clock. We have another break. We're going to come back and revisit some of the things we've been discussing. My guests this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, John Kerr and Chris Cruz. Chris is going to be boarding an airplane back to Nicaragua this morning.
If it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you. I'm Greg Berube, the owner of CrossFit Scopus. After spending time in our facility and with our team, we want our members to walk out of our doors feeling like a better version of themselves. You can lose weight, build muscle, and get a great workout in, but the community and support of Scopus will keep you coming back for more. Go to CrossFitScopus.com. We will help you build life-changing habits that improve your quality of life for now and for the future. We are CrossFit Scopus in Dundas, right by Menards.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
When it's time for preventative maintenance on your new car or truck, you don't just take your car into anyone. At Witt Brothers Service in Northfield, you know you found a name you can trust. To start, we're a Napa Auto Care Center, so the technicians we employ are experts trained in every aspect of your vehicle's maintenance. This gives you the peace of mind in knowing that everything we do is accepted under the terms of your manufacturer's warranty. Add to that the fact that we use quality Napa parts that meet or exceed original equipment and specifications. And you have the one place where you can entrust all of your vehicles. Come see Witt Brothers Service in downtown Northfield today.
You're listening to KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, broadcasting live in downtown Northfield. Somewhat overcast on this Wednesday morning. John Kerr and Chris Cruz are my guests this morning, and Chris is going to be boarding an airplane to go back to Nicaragua, where he lives in Jalapa. Did I say that one right?
Yep.
Say, you know what America has gone on to since the mid-60s, maybe, and trying to stamp out smoking. And you mentioned that you were a tobacco farmer. What is smoking like in Nicaragua in regards to pipe smoking, cigarette smoking, cigar smoking? What is your play in that?
Yeah, there's a lot of people smoke cigarettes.
Okay.
Yeah, no cigars or pipes. But a lot of people, you know, young people are getting into smoking now.
Yeah. Well, in my generation, everybody smoked.
Mm-hmm.
And your mother, your father, your grandma, your grandpa, your aunts, your uncles, everybody smoked.
Yeah.
And the tobacco that you raise, you sell it to somebody for cigars or cigarettes? Or cigars are big time now, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't grow tobacco.
Oh, I thought
I live where in that area.
That area is grown. Major.
Yeah,
one
never
major.
Mind. Yeah. My bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but basically what they do is they roll cigars.
Okay.
Yeah, and they there's Cubans and Colombians and very few locals growing tobacco down there.
Well, was that because a lot of people escaped Cuba when Fidel came into play in 1959, I believe it was, and took some seeds with them and Correct. Said, let's go plant it in the same climate, and that's what's going on? You know about that, John?
Yeah. No, it's pretty fascinating. The area that Chris lives in is, Jalapa is a big... Used to be a corn-producing area. It used to be like the Iowa of Nicaragua, but it's been displaced now, a lot of it, by tobacco crops because they can make so much money for export off those. And when you mentioned smoking, I'm actually struck by how few Nicaraguans smoke. I think kids probably are starting to smoke more, but mostly it's cigarettes are too expensive for them most of the time, and they want the money to go out for exports, and they make big money off the tobacco products. And a lot of, you know, average Nicaraguans are the pickers and the people who handle or the rollers, et cetera. And they make a huge number of cigars there now. They actually rival or pass Cuba in both the quantity and the quality of cigars.
Are they protesting? Are they stopping production and exports?
No.
No.
I mean, the Cubans own and
okay.
Yeah, own the farms and the factories and everything.
Was Ortega ever a good guy in your eyes?
Well, there were many programs that he was organizing that I liked. But there was always, you know, the things this program were run was always crooked. And I guess the intention of his ideas were good. But I don't know. He has done good for many people.
Well, would you put him in the position as a dictator now?
Yeah, yeah, he is a dictator.
As opposed to being a president. He's a dictator.
He's a dictator. I don't think he wants to get out of office.
Does he ever go places in Nicaragua, like Jalapa or other cities, and act like a president of a country? Or does he have a big military force that he goes into communities with? What's your exposure to this guy that is, in your opinion, I believe, is not good for the country?
He used to go out to, you know, all the towns, well, cities, but I don't think he's doing that anymore.
Very rare public appearances. There are a lot of rumors that he's very sick, actually, potentially, too.
So how old is he?
72, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He just appeared, as I mentioned, on Fox News. It was the first international interview he'd given in 9 years.
Yeah.
And he's barely given any press conferences in Nicaragua for the
last
decade.
What did he say?
Well, he said a number of different things, questioned about the unrest there, and basically, in my opinion, you know, denied that the government had any role and denied that there were any big problems, and it was all getting straightened out.
And did the reporter try to dig in a little further?
He was pressed on it, you know, and particularly the conflicts and the accounts of the human rights organizations, the accounts of the Catholic Church, and, you know, again, as I mentioned, he denied that there was any problems with the Catholic Church, and even though he on other occasions has declared them to be behind the, I think evil spirits was the word used once by his wife, that were invading Nicaragua, satanic spirits.
Did the Pope ever visit Nicaragua?
A long time ago, not recently, but okay. Back in the 80s.
He's a pretty active Pope right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, and he has spoken, too, on the unrest. He says he's very concerned and unhappy about the situation.
Would that be a good thing if you could get the Pope come to Nicaragua and address... what are you laughing for?
I don't think... You know, they are not respecting anybody down there now. The bishops are playing an important role trying to mediate. But I read a comment posted on Facebook by one of the biggest guys of Ortega saying that priest gowns are not bulletproof. So.
Wow. Wow. I think didn't they have some kind of a deal where they killed some nuns down there?
About that was in El Salvador, next door.
Okay.
But yes, it feels similar to some of that.
Okay. So you're going to get on this plane, you're going to go home to your wife and your two children, 17 and 7, I think?
Nine.
And he's going to graduate from high school, or has, and he wants to go to college, and you have a little bit of reservation about that, because does he want to go to a major community, or does he want to go to a smaller college in a smaller district?
He wants to go to veterinary school.
Okay.
And that's in the cities.
Okay.
Yeah, Managua or León.
And you're feeling daddy?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? I mean, most people would be real proud if their kids said, I want to be a veterinarian.
Yeah. We have the small farm, and I think that would be good for us, you know, having a vet in the family.
But you seem to be somewhat... hesitant on him going into Managua to go to school.
Yeah, that's not safe right now. He might just take a year off and maybe come up here and milk cows.
Yeah, okay. So does he have an opinion at 17, just out of high school? Are there kids that age that have an opinion about Ortego and the way the country is going?
Yeah, I mean, all the students are reacting.
So, you know, what is your son's name?
Chris. So, yeah, Junior.
Okay. So if Junior goes into Managua to go to veterinarian school, you would be worried because of the student unrest that are supporting the senior citizens?
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't let him go now. Yeah. You know, he's not graduated yet. Our school runs from February to November. So graduation is in December.
Okay.
But next year, I don't think it will be safe yet.
So Dad's going to say, nope, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Does he have a car?
No.
No. No. You have a car?
We do have a work truck.
A truck?
Yeah.
Okay. One more break before we say adios. Is that the right word?
Yeah, adios.
We'll be back in just a moment on KYMN Radio. Stick around because don't go anywhere, Chris, because we're going to talk immigration when we get back. We started off with that a little bit, but we'll have a few minutes to get your input.
Come to the Scott County Fair, July 25th through the 29th, for 5 days you won't forget. This year, the fair near Jordan will be bigger and better than ever. Wade and Mary Lou Fredenberg will be performing after the church service on Sunday, and you'll be wowed by the popular events at the fair, including the Lumberjack, Circus and Fire Shows, Gold Star Amusements, Miracle of Birth, huge draft horse shows, and so much more. Go to scottcountyfair.org for a complete list of events. Don't miss the Scott County Fair, July 25th through the 29th.
Get out of my room!
It's my room too.
Why are you always in my business?
Are you always a dummy head?
Good one.
Mom, Lauren sarcastically complimented me.
Mom, Emily's on my side of the room.
Mom, we can't share a room any longer.
Stop complaining. I have to share a room with your baby brother and your father.
Is your family in need of more space? Let Professional Pride Realty in Northfield help guide you through the process of selling your current house and finding the home that is right for your growing family. Professional Pride Realty, providing good information so you can make good decisions.
Are you looking for a rewarding career with a successful growing company? Post Consumer Brands, the makers of Malt Meal, Honey Bunches of Oats, and Pebbles, is hiring full-time in Northfield. We're looking for passionate individuals with previous manufacturing experience and a high school degree. We offer competitive wages for production employees starting at $20.63 an hour and maintenance employees starting at up to $31 an hour, depending on experience. 401k with a generous company match and bonus incentive plans. To view openings and apply for our full-time positions, visit jobs.postconsumerbrands.com/KYMN.
We are here live and in color from our studios in downtown Northfield, and Mr. Chris Cruz, is getting ready to leave to go back to Nicaragua. And one of the things I'd like to leave with in regards to that, John is getting a few tears in his eyes because you've been with Chris for a little while here in America. Can you get that microphone closer to you, Chris? I appreciate that.
Yep.
Immigration. That's the big story in America, immigration. And with all the unrest that you have in Nicaragua and drive-by, we call it in America, drive-by shootings with government trucks, license plates that say Nicaragua government, and six, seven people in the back of a pickup with AK-47s just killing people. Sounds like Mexico.
Yeah.
But what about immigration? What do you hear in Jalapa and other places in regards to saying, I've had enough, I got to get out of here?
Yeah. You know, immigration has been an issue in Nicaragua for the last few years because of unemployment, basically. A lot of people are leaving. A lot of women going to Spain find jobs there. You know, they get a job out of Nicaragua and send money back home, and that helps support their families. Children go to school and have better conditions. So that's been a huge thing in Nicaragua.
So we're talking about reverse immigration, people leaving as opposed to people coming in.
Yeah.
So there's no big line of people wanting to get into Nicaragua?
No, not now. Okay. Not now.
Well, so this guy is 72 years old. He's been in power for 11 years. He changed the Constitution so he could triple up his service to the country. And they live in a palatial place in Managua.
Yeah.
And the senior citizens are started this about their Social Security. The students are supporting the senior citizens, but that's the straw that broke the camel's back. What is your future, Chris Cross? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, you know, the people are pushing on having early elections, on move the election, because he's a problem for Nicaragua. And, well, he's supposed to be in office until 2021. Yeah, so, but people, students and seniors and everybody are claiming him to leave.
And who's the leader that would run for office? Are there several parties, two parties, or is there one really high profiled individual?
Yeah, now it's kind of, you know, that was kind of the problem we had, I mean, the opposition had, so Ortega could be there because of a lot of branches of one party. Everybody wants to be a president.
Yeah, okay.
But now, I think it will be different. It will be just one force, just one branch against Ortega. Everybody, all the opposition parties are joining one.
Okay.
So, but there's still, we still don't know who can, because, you know, the politician, we know, even if being liberals, we don't want them anymore. They are crooked too, corrupt, and we want new people. Yeah. There are some faces, some people that are kind of being picked or selected.
Now, would they be targets of assassination?
They are being target already.
Already?
Yeah. We had the leader of the campesinos, the farmers, the peasant, in he's been leading this movement out in the east coast, Atlantic coast.
And two of them, actually.
Yeah, and he was arrested the other day. Yeah.
Well, I know you got to go, but would you, if you had the opportunity, take your wife and your two children and go to Spain or go to America, would you leave the country if you had the opportunity and the means to do it?
Well, you know, we have things back home. Yeah, like I say, it'll be hard.
Parents,
a hard decision. But that can be taken if we don't like Ortega, you know. He will take our land and everything. But I would come to Northfield if I decide to live there.
Okay. Well, you got a good friend in John Kerr that would sponsor you. Thank you very much, Chris, for being here. And I wish you good luck. And I really mean it. Hope everything is going to go safe for you.
Mm-hmm.
I know KYMN Radio streams, so there could be somebody in Nicaragua listening to this.
Yeah.
Is that scary at all?
Yeah, it is scary.
Yeah. You know, there was a guy from, Syria that I wanted on my show,
mm-hmm.
and his brother was a higher-up person in the government of Syria, and he wouldn't come anywhere near this microphone for fear that they would hurt his brother and his family and his family. So,
yeah, no, that's true.
Well, I hope nobody... I hope first time I'll ever say this, I hope nobody's listening in Nicaragua.
Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Are you on the internet?
That's we're streaming.
Yeah. No, thank you for having me.
It's been pleasure.
Yeah.
And God bless you and
thank you again.
And good luck in the future. And keep us posted.
Yeah.
You know, we can always do telephone or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or, sure.
What do they call it when you can see each other? Skyping.
Skype. Yeah. Skype, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. We'll be back with Mr. Kerr in just a moment on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota, a friend you can count on.
Secret tape, Cohen revelation, Trump responds. I'm John Trout. A recording is rocking Washington between attorney Michael Cohen and then-candidate Donald Trump discussing buying the rights to the story of former Playboy playmate Karen McDougal, who claims she had an affair with Mr. Trump.
We've enhanced the important part of Michael Cohen's recording with candidate Donald Trump. Cohen brings up how to finance the payment.
What finance?
We'll have to No.
For Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani on Fox News, the words are clear.
That President Trump says, don't pay with cash.
Cohen's personal lawyer, Lanny Davis.
The only people who use cash are drug dealers and mobsters.
Bob Costantini, Washington.
President Trump blasts Cohen on Twitter this morning. Abby Phillip reads the tweet.
He says, what kind of lawyer would tape a client so sad? Is this a first? Never heard of it before? Why was the tape so abruptly cut while I was presumably saying positive things?
Questions remain with lawmakers in D.C. over discussions between President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee plan to ask Secretary of State Mike Pompeo what he knows.
While we don't get the president, we're going to have the Secretary of State, and we're going to ask him, were you debriefed by the president directly? Do you have any notes as it relates to such a debriefing? Were you debriefed by any other staff that may have talked to the president?
Seaside communities near Athens, Greece, have been decimated by wildfire. Correspondent Melissa Bell says the death toll is on the rise.
That death toll has now risen to 80, and it will continue to rise because there are so many people missing, and because the nature of the fire here in Mati and then to the west of Athens as well was so devastatingly fast and intense.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 53 points, the NASDAQ up 4. I'm John Trout.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota. By the way, sometimes about once a month I'll mention this because my guests kind of wonder. The reason I use Rebel Rouser, my opening music, it's Dwayne Eddy, and it was really a big deal in my youth. And the reason I use the Beatles when I'm 64 is because I started my broadcast career in 1964, and then I started doing this show when I was 64. So that's why I use that. And I don't like to have to explain it, but a lot of people ask me, and so...
I thought it was for me. I'm 64.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, were they right? Is your wife still like you and
well,
keeps the
door
open?
Well, she just came to pick up another man, so I don't know what that means.
That was your wife?
Yeah.
I thought it was your daughter. Yeah. So anyhow, thanks to Don Pavic for letting me know about your being in town. Where do you live?
Northfield.
Right here.
Yeah.
I mean, what side of town?
North of North Street. Yeah, on the Dakota County end.
Okay.
Yeah, up by the hospital direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know where that area, back in the old days, that area was referred to as Wang's Woods, but that was further east, I think. So, anyhow, I have a book here that you have written called Mark Twain and the River of Timeless Temptation, A Devilish Tale in Paradise by John Kerr. In 1866, a young Mark Twain went on his first international trip, crossing Central America through Nicaragua on a popular route used by 49ers and others before the Panama Canal construction. His real-life travelogues included a mysterious companion named Mr. Brown. But what Clemens didn't describe, and John Kerr's fictional interpretation, explore, was Brown's satanic purpose in taking them on a journey back in time, meeting other famous and local travelers in the Rio San Juan area, including Cornelius Vanderbilt. future Lord Nelson, pirate Henry Morgan, and even Christopher Columbus. Gathering experiences and story ideas, the future great author also has opportunities to disrupt the narrative of time. Will Sammy trade his soul for fame and fortune, or will he rewrite history forever? Mr. Mark Twain. So this is fiction.
Correct.
And it's
historical fiction,
it's
yes.
Your imagination.
It is.
And
yeah.
What the,
as far as I know, they didn't actually happen. But
so but. You just sat down and said, you know what, I think I'm going to uncover the secret of Mark Twain. And I'm going to use characters from the past to see how Mark Twain would deal with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how would he deal with the pirates?
Well, all those characters actually did actually travel on that river at one point in time. That's kind of what it stemmed from. And Mark Twain actually did travel across the Central American Isthmus on that river back before, just after the American Civil War. And
what's the name of the river?
The Rio San Juan.
Okay.
And he wrote about it, but he didn't actually put it in a book. He did it in newspaper articles. And so, again, we don't hear much about it here in this country, but it's well known down there. And another example of, I guess, how things are so interconnected and what happens. The connection between the United States and Nicaragua has been really long running and in a lot of different ways. And what's happening there right now, I think, too. I think the message I always take from it is what happens there does affect us eventually, too. What I'm fictionalizing here with Mark Twain was that he got a lot of his ideas. He was a very young Sam Clemens. He hadn't written a book yet at that point, anything. And he took this trip down this river, which is kind of magical when you get there. It's this beautiful jungle journey. It's like the Amazon kind of thing in a miniature version. And it got him from, in his case, the Pacific coast to the Atlantic coast. It was the route that was supposed to be the Panama Canal, supposed to be the original canal until the Panamanians befuddled Congress and confused him and got him scared to be in Nicaragua and went to Panama instead. But he travels that route, and so I envision him meeting these different other characters who also were on that route at different times as he travels along with it. And he uses a companion with him, Mr. Brown, who was a real character that Twain put in many of his books as a foil. And in my case, I made him into this character who's kind of showing Clemens all these lessons of history and all these characters that he can use in different ways in his future novels, and saying, you know, it's kind of a Devil Went to Georgia story, that, you know, if you do these things, we're going to help you out and be rich and famous. And of course, you're going to owe us something here at the end.
Well, so would Mark Twain purists who think he is the epitome of humor and sarcasm, et cetera. Was that a part of your life growing up that you just took a huge interest in Mark Twain?
Yeah, no, I clearly have been a Twainophile, and there's a lot of us around, and love all the stories of the Mississippi River, and of course when I went to Nicaragua and saw the Rio San Juan, it was like kind of amazing to find out there was this other river that he also loved, you know, when he was there, and it's a huge river in Nicaraguan consciousness and history. So those things combined for me to be a really interesting combination.
And why were you in Nicaragua?
Well, I work, in the first half of the show we were talking about, in the northern part of the country, but I've traveled there on my own since the 80s and spent a lot of time in the southern part of the country, which is where the Rio San Juan is located and the other areas that he traveled across.
And what is your work?
Well, Isla does a lot of work, has done
what,
a lot.
Isla, what is
Isla? Interfaith Services to Latin America.
Okay.
And it began well over 20 years ago now in working in Honduras originally, but then moved into northern Nicaragua doing a lot of medical missions, taking a lot of people, and then construction of schools and clinics. We've had a lot of people from Northfield go on trips and do a lot of good work down there. So.
Are you a minister?
No, I'm not okay. At all. No, I'm.
You work? Is that a religious organization that you work for?
No, we're non-denominational, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. We started by a couple churches, but we're completely across the board.
And you're a nonprofit.
Yes, correct.
And what is your title within that organization?
I'm executive director. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. And then you have a board of directors.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then your job is to find people that would be willing to go and mm-hmm. help those that need help in Nicaragua mm-hmm. in this case. Well, here's my question on that. I learned through a good friend of mine who was a retired dentist, and he would travel down with, I think, the Rotarians, and they would make a week or two-week trip down to South America, can't remember, maybe Ecuador, mm-hmm. and they could accomplish so much in such little time. And I always kind of say, well, where did you sleep? What did you eat? And it seems like you're pretty... Then I talk to people like Don Pavic mm-hmm. and others that have gone down to Chris Cruz's hometown mm-hmm. and help build things. And I was taken aback that you have to pay to do it. That I went, what? I figured you'd say, I'll be there, I'll be a body, get me there, I'll do all the work, put me on a plane and get me home. But they have to pay their own way to get there and to get back, and motel rooms and food and all that. Mm-hmm. That's quite a contribution.
It is. It definitely is. And some very, very generous people doing that. And it's we hope that the benefits that come back to people, I mean, obviously, and our model is built around, you know, some of that funding the projects and paying for the staff and paying for the things that we need down there, the material uses to build the things and to, you know, help people there who really need the help. You know, you hope that what comes back is the learning experience that everybody gets out of that, out of being, you know, directly there and work. In many cases, we try to make it a side-by-side work experience with Nicaraguans and really get to meet them. And we have interpreters, you know, who try to stay close at hand. And we try to give cultural experiences, too, so people can really learn, you know, as well as contributing. So it kind of goes both ways.
What about the feeling that... they might have that, oh, you think you're better than us. And you know, to me, if you pay several thousand dollars to spend 2 weeks in a place that's archaic compared to your own home, that's a pretty nice gesture. But I wonder, do the people think, oh, gosh, we have to wait? You know, I imagine people of all colors are in your organization, mm-hmm. but the attitude about, oh, those rich Americans come down here and spend 2 weeks and they get to go back to their luxury homes and swimming pools.
That is a challenge, to be honest, yes. And we do have to be concerned that we're seen as being there as friends and not as people who are telling them this is the way you should live or this is what you should be. And there is a perception, you know, which is actually true. We might not believe it, but we are really wealthy compared to them. And, you know, so we do, again, try to always set up situations so that you're working with people, not overseeing them, not displacing them, too, which is really important because, I mean, some of these construction projects Nicaraguans could really work at, too. We're trying to hold down costs to get the building started, of course, but we're also hiring Nicaraguans, and then we do projects in between, and oftentimes we'll start a project with Americans but then have it completed by Nicaraguans that we might hire. So that kind of helps, too, to build that teamwork sense that we're all involved in getting this done together.
Well, how do you find a project?
Well, Chris is there as our staff person, so he can help identify things, and then we have partners in the community that we work with, hopefully we'll keep doing that. We had been working for quite a while with the government hospital, and we found some private places now we can do different projects with and take down, you know, medical groups and nursing groups and things. So,
how many years have you been doing this?
I'm 10 years now.
Okay,
yeah.
What is the difference in Alapa?
Alapa, yeah.
Alapa.
Uh-huh.
Today compared to when you first went there?
Boy, it's a big difference for me, and I know for people who've gone before me, you know, people even from Northfield who went there a long time ago talk about just dramatic differences. You know, it's still, by our standards, a community with a lot of needs, but they do have finally some paved streets. It used to be all just dirt and horse and buggy. I mean, there's still a lot of that around, but there's street signs finally. There's, you know, different improvements, more importantly, probably in the hospital, for example, that we helped rebuild a lot of. Didn't used to have electricity in a lot of areas. You know, there were a lot of needs of equipment that we brought down. We built quite a number of schools. You mentioned Don and some others who've done a lot of work in that. We've built a number, I think the number is like 7 or 8 different schools, new schools built in the area there. And rebuilt a number of schools too and added on to schools. So our impact has been felt quite a bit in that community.
Now, Jalapa, did I say it right?
Jalapa, yeah.
Jalapa, okay. Jalapa is located on a hill?
It's in kind. It's a valley between a mountainous area, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so it's hard to get in and out, I mean, without roads.
And that's another major difference is now there's a pretty good road comes right into the community all the way from the airport in Managua. We can actually have a paved road the entire way, but I guess originally when people were going there, and especially after there was Hurricane Mitch back in 1998, there were, you know, you literally had to ford rivers and things like that to get there. It was really, really bad. There are a lot of bridges now that were built. There are like 20 bridges that we have to cross, and most of them weren't built back originally.
How close to the coast were they that a hurricane would affect them?
The hurricane swept across the entire country. I mean, Nicaragua is small enough. It's only about 150 miles wide at that point. So, you know, it came in from the Atlantic and swept right across to the Pacific side.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of landslides and a lot of problems.
John Kerr is my guest on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN, and we will be back on the 95.1 FM in just a moment.
Hay season is save season at John Deere. For a limited time, enjoy extra savings on select John Deere mower conditioners and round balers. Pay a visit to your local John Deere dealer to learn just how much you can save on these hard-working hay tools and get high performance at a low cost season after season. Offer ends October 26, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. See your John Deere dealer for qualifying products and complete details.
Thursday is Crazy Days in Northfield, and Champion Sports in downtown Northfield will have all kinds of crazy buys both inside and out. Northfield letter jackets will be $30 off, and all Northfield apparel is 20% off. Athletic shoes, running shoes, sandals, and kids' shoes are up to 75% off. These and many other shoes are all at crazy deals this Thursday, cash or check only. The crazy buys begin at 7 a.m. this Thursday at Champion Sports in downtown Northfield.
What's the best part of grilling season? Grissom Sweet Corn, of course. Grissom's Corn is back and at a new location, just off Highway 3 between 2nd and 3rd Street, right next to the Quarterback Club. Let Glenn and Cindy Grissom's friendly employees help you with the area's best fresh-picked sweet corn and have some for dinner tonight.
Hi, this is Steve DeLong, manager of the Northfield Liquor Store. We invite you to come in and check out our great selection of fine wines from around the globe. With nearly 2,000 different labels to choose from, we can help you find the right wine to fit your taste and your budget, no matter what the occasion. You can find all your favorites right here in downtown Northfield at the Muni, where profits directly support the community.
Well, thank you, Mr. DeLong. I appreciate that. By the way, the other day I was over at the Quarterback Club, and I saw this tent between the Quarterback Club and the Hispanic grocery store, which used to be the American Legion, and a nice tent there, and it said Grissom Sweet Corn. Well, it's a tradition in Northfield for Grissom Sweet Corn, but it's always been, for most of the time, on 7th and Water Street. And I'm going, well, it sign says Grissom, and now I know. You ever buy that?
Mm-hmm. Sure do.
And you get home and you can't wait. It's just so delicious. Do you pour sugar in the water when you boil it?
I'm kind of a straight natural guy, I guess, okay. But it's great either way, I'm sure.
Oh, a little sugar in there and then a lot of butter, mm-hmm. Salt and pepper. I'm happy. Speaking about happy, John Kerr's here. He's talking about Mark Twain and the River of Timeless Temptation, and among other things. And I have to say, when you handed me this book, tomorrow, an old friend of mine that I haven't seen, I'll bet you, for 10 years, we got together by way of that new thing called a cell phone or a smartphone or whatever. And we had gone fishing together on occasions, and So we decided we're going to go fishing, and he got a guide, and we're meeting tomorrow morning at Walgreens on 98th and Lindale at 7:15, and then we're going to drive to the St. Croix, and then our guide is going to give us 8 hours of fishing. Pack a lunch, pack proper clothing, and bring something to drink, and don't bring any fishing gear. We'll take care of you. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, on the river, you never know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I kept wanting to know what tomorrow's going to be like. You know, I don't want to bring a raincoat. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Are you a fishing
Well,
I'll person?
Make sure it doesn't rain, so.
Yeah. Will we take care of that, John?
Sure. Okay. I'll work on that. Yeah.
So when you were a boy and you heard of Mark Twain, well, first of all, where were you when you were a boy?
I actually grew up in Ohio. So, like everyone, an American kid, I grew up hearing about Mark Twain and Huck and Tom and, you know, all the characters and imagining that for myself. And didn't know, of course, I'd be moving to the source of the Mississippi up here, so nearby, and living near that for most of my life, adult life here. And so it probably, you know, brought a lot of those characters to life in my brain and became a Mark Twainophile out of it all. And then again, traveling to Nicaragua and to my surprise, finding out that Mark Twain had also spent a chunk of his early years as a writer passing through Nicaragua and writing about this other river down there that was sort of a magical place to Nicaraguans and to some extent was to him too.
So what are some of the favorite books that Mark Twain wrote? What are some of your favorites?
Well, I don't think anything can top Huck Finn. I mean, it really is, the book. I think as Hemingway said, you know, is the book that really started American literature. It clearly is a story that's, you know, we think of it as a kid's story, but it really is a lot more than that. It was a social message story. About race relations and the state of the country, and it was controversial then. It's still controversial, but I think that's good.
Do you think they should change the wording in the man's book?
That's a hard one. I'm a purist. I think it needs to be, if it's used in an educational setting, it definitely needs some good explanation. The teacher has to prepare the students for the kind of language and make sure they know that it's satire, you know, that he doesn't mean to be insulting. It was the language of that era. And so it's a tough one to use. And you have to be careful. I once had experience. I was actually driving. I was actually listening to an audio tape of Huck Finn at one point driving on a turnpike. It was in Indiana, I think. And I had it blurring away as I'm pulling into the pay that guy. And they started in with the N-word and language. And I hadn't even thought about it coming on right then. And the guy was looking at me like, you know, he's looking at my back seat like, am I carrying any weapons? Am I some kind of weirdo?
Is this the toll window?
Yeah, toll window, yeah.
And they're using the N-word, and the
right.
guy's probably
a
black guy.
Yeah.
Name some other books, Mark Twain, that you enjoy.
Almost all of them. I've been spending a lot of time with Innocents Abroad lately, which seems to carry some new significance. It's a story. It was actually his first novel and was the first one he was famous for. Doesn't get remembered as much now, but that was his travel to the Holy Land. And he took a boat across the ocean with, they called themselves pilgrims, and it was church leaders to go travel through Europe and the Mediterranean area and then on to Israel and the entire region there. And he describes satirically, all of his experiences. It's kind of interesting, you know, and given all the issues we still have in that part of the world, to see how many existed back then, too. Yeah.
Now, if I remember, Mark Twain is a measure of depth, isn't it?
Depth of water. Sorry, I misheard you.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Actually.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about depth intellectually.
Yeah. Yes, it was used on the Mississippi River to measure a safe zone for the boat to travel over.
And his real name is?
Samuel Clemens, yeah.
And he is probably, would he be in the top 10 of published books, do you think? after the Bible, number one.
Then. Yes. Yeah, no, he definitely is. I've seen it somewhere. I don't remember the exact number, but he's still right up there. Yeah. Yeah. No, he always will be.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
along with all the crazy spin-off books like mine.
Yeah, and it just surprises me, A Devilish Tale in Paradise. And is this tongue-in-cheek the whole way through?
It is. It is,
okay.
Yeah.
And what made you feel that this might sell?
I don't know if anything would make it sell, but it was something that struck me, the history, which was my background academically, of that river that's not known in most of the world, is really quite amazing that all these characters really did set foot on or very near it, all the way back to Columbus. One of his voyages landed on the coast, very near the source of it. And the issues that Twain kind of explored in a lot of his own writing touched a lot of the issues, and Vanderbilt, he did mention, who was the owner of the steamboat line that Twain traveled on, and then these other characters really did spend time on the river, like Lord Nelson, he was then Lieutenant Nelson. One of his first commands was to capture this old Spanish fortress on the Rio San Juan that was built to stop pirates, and the English were included as pirates at that point. Henry Morgan, we know that from Morgan's the drinking, imbibing thing.
Captain Morgan.
Captain Morgan, yeah, that was Henry Morgan, and he was basically a pirate. It's all he really was.
Okay.
And he actually would travel up that river and sail across the lake, connect Lake Nicaragua, and raid the Spanish cities, and that's what he was known for. And so they built this big fortress to stop him and the other pirates on the river. And Lord Nelson's first command was to capture that fortress, which he did. But unfortunately, he got malaria, and most of his men got malaria at the same point, and he ended up having to be surrendered, turn it back over to the Spanish within about 2 weeks. So headed back to safety in the Atlantic side. So all these characters were there on the river, and there were some in Nicaraguan history that are really famous on there. And so I have Twain traveling back and meeting all these people in time, guided by his friend Mr. Brown, who's basically saying, we're going to win you over. We'll help you with these things, and you can use them in stories. And he meets a woman there who's a famous Nicaraguan heroine who I fantasize is the birth of Joan of Arc in his mind, which Twain also wrote about. And then he goes all the way back to meet Columbus. And he's always tempted to try to change history, as he did in Connecticut Yankee book. And so all these characters sort of emerge in places in time that Twain could potentially change thing, and Mr. Brown's always having this problem of keeping him under control.
Have you ever gone downriver on the Mississippi?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And from where to where?
I've been along most of the length. I haven't taken the entire boat trip down or anything, and I've canoed and paddled, and mostly here in the upper Mississippi, in Iowa versions, but I've certainly been down Hannibal and Missouri area, and down the South, New Orleans, and so, yeah.
But you never made one continuous
trip? No, unfortunately, I've never done that. It's always been a great fantasy, but yeah, lots of friends that have.
And how about that river in Nicaragua?
I have done that, yeah.
What is it?
Rio San Juan.
Yeah.
It's a much shorter version of the Mississippi.
What does Rio mean?
River.
River?
Yeah.
San Juan.
Yeah.
To be the
San
river?
Juan. Yeah.
River John?
The river, be St. John River, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you did the entire river.
Yeah.
Okay, in what?
There are public boats, and then you can fly to one end. I've sort of done it in chunks, is what I should say, but I've seen it all, yeah, and done it all. And
but not like in a canoe?
No, I do know people have done that, but it's a pretty serious jungle river, so a canoe would be
No, you called it
stretch.
A mini Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So are there... you were on a commercial boat when you went in bits and pieces all the way down?
Yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. They do have actually boats that will take people along, motorized boats, and they can motor along. You can do it in about a day or a day and a half. Yeah,
the whole river.
Yeah, yeah, It's about 175 miles, but it's a windy, jungly thing.
Yeah. And how wide or narrow does it get?
It can, it varies, but it can be about as wide as the Mississippi here in, say, the Twin Cities area. And then it actually opens into a floodplain at the Atlantic end where it empties out. And there's a old village there that still remains with the cemeteries of all the characters that landed there. I mean, way back to, like, the 16th century, tombstones are there. All neatly divided between, I think it was the Indians and the Christians and what was the other group? I can't remember. They're, trade organization groups and sailors. They put sailors in a separate category, too. They didn't want them polluting the rest of them. So,
John Kerr, my guest on KYMN Radio, when you think about the Amazon and its great length and power and the various ways it flows, and you think about wildlife and you think about wild nature and beasts, that would be kind of scary to do in a smaller boat or canoe for sure. Did your river that you were talking about, the San Juan,
Real San Juan?
Yeah. Come on, wait. Real San Juan. What was it like in that regard, wildlife and plants?
It's still a major wildlife area. It's actually been a preserve, a little backdrop to the troubles currently that we mentioned was there were fires in that whole area back in February this year, I believe, February and March, that were really out of control, and a lot of criticism that the government wasn't stepping in to try to put out the fires very well. And suspicion was that they were deliberately not helping put them out because they wanted to clear the land for settlement, including potentially friends, of the government who could then thereby get free land for cattle grazing, et cetera, et cetera. And so there was an environmental aspect, too, to the protests that it all fell into what people feel like there's been a lot of corruption and greed that's grown in the government.
Which, of course, Chris Cruz, our guest, the first hour,
right,
substantiated. And it's a murderous coup that may come about. We're switching gears here, folks, because John Kerr is an author, and he's the CEO of Interface.
Services to Latin America, yeah.
And so we're bouncing around here.
Yeah, it's Nicaragua Day.
Yeah, Nicaragua. What is the big city like in like Managua? Isn't there a song, Managua, Nicaragua?
Oh, yeah, there was. Yes, back in the 50s. I couldn't sing it, though. You wouldn't want me to. It's like many developing country capital areas or big cities, really dramatically grown in the last 20 or so years as people from rural areas, flock there. And, basically try to live wherever they can, hoping they'll find work, of course. They've built a lot of these, in the U.S. call them maquiladoras. They're free trade zone areas. They're big sweatshop kind of factory areas where they build a lot of or make a lot of goods, usually clothing goods, for sale in the world market. And so for every job there, there'll probably be 20 people that will flock to the city trying to hopefully get some employment. And so it's grown dramatically, and it's frankly kind of an urban nightmare mess. So there are some very nice areas still to the city, and then there are some areas that are just, tin shack kind of places that people live without any running water kind of things. And it's not your classically beautiful city in any sense at all, because there was a major earthquake back in the 1970s that they never totally rebuilt from. So they just sort of built around it, So you might have a brand new shopping mall right next to the wreck of an old building that's still left there. Then you might have a neighborhood that, again, would look like it would fit right in the richest area in any American city. And next to it might be a ghetto, full of tin shacks. So it's a real mix.
Is there any famous architectural past?
Not since the earthquake.
Oh.
Yeah, they used to talk about it being the Paris of the Central America, but the earthquake was pretty devastating to all the nicer places there. It's
like a cathedral, didn't it?
There was an old cathedral that still the remains of it still stand, and it probably was very nice. And they built a brand new one now, and it's kind of a new avant-garde kind of style, very different kind of looking. It's hard to describe even.
Do you like it?
I can't say it's my cup of tea kind of place, but it's interesting. It kind of looks like some kind of weird egg-shaped building with little bubbles coming out of it. So
is it high or is it?
It's not terribly high. It's only maybe three-story high.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It's not, but it's very, very broad, and it's become now a sanctuary for a lot of these students who've fled. Actually, they're actually having to stay in out of fear for their lives in that sanctuary, and you know, so there's been a lot of violence around that area.
What about the population? Is it like here in America, they call us a mix or a melting pot, and do they have what would be considered, a different culture of individuals there in various neighborhoods?
The biggest mixes in Nicaragua are, there's the old indigenous population, the Indian population is left in some areas, although in most of Latin America they've intermingled, you know, so much with the Spanish-speaking, you know, white settlers. It's kind of just a common mix of them. But there are some areas that are exclusively Indian. The other thing that's really the biggest difference is on the east coast, the Atlantic coast of Nicaragua, like, again, most of the Caribbean, Central American countries, there's a really large black population that was brought in to do a lot of work in fields and railroads, et cetera, and Jamaicans in particular. So it's interesting that over there on that Atlantic side, in fact, where the river came out that I talked about, the Rio San Juan, there's a large, almost all black population in that area, and then mixes some with the Indians there too. So those are the biggest racial kind of differences and ethnic differences.
How about religion? Muslim population?
No, very few people of Islamic faith. Or even Jewish faith, there used to be, but they mostly left the country. So it's largely Christian, either Catholic or evangelical Protestant, generally speaking. And then some mainline churches, but there's not too many, you know, sort of main churches. Although it's funny, in the town we work in, there's a university called Martin Luther. But it happens to be, you know, more evangelical. They just like the name. It's not actually Lutheran.
Has the Nicaraguans ever participated in a positive way, like, say, during the Second World War?
I believe Nicaragua did declare war, you know, went along with the United States to support us during the Second World War, and I think there were some American troops stationed there, you know, mostly to guard that coastline area. Curiously, until recently, very recently, as I'd mentioned, Nicaragua is one of the safest countries statistically in Central America. And that's obviously really changed now in the last, you know, 3 months. But they actually were working quite well with the U.S. Coast Guard to do a drug interdiction in the Caribbean area. In fact, there was a U.S. Coast Guard base on the Caribbean side, I think even a small one, even back during the Contra War years. So they were actually still cooperating on that level all that time and have pretty well. And Nicaragua has done actually quite an amazing job compared to its neighbors of keeping out the drug trade in the country.
Now, that's good news.
It is good news. But the fear now is that could be changing. And particularly what's going on with the disruption, one of the things that it's doing is creating an opening for, you know, when you've got guys already riding around, you know, a ski mask over their head and carrying weapons, and you don't for sure know which side they're on, there's a lot of fear that drug gangs are coming in and will make use of the situation and just take advantage and start bringing drug trade through, you know, to bring drugs from South America to probably to the United States.
Well, when will you be going back?
Good question. I hope not too far away. We were going to take a group down in May, actually, of nurses and nursing students, and had to cancel the trip, unfortunately, because of all the violence and unrest. If things settle down and we feel like we can safely do it and do some good there too, we hope to be doing something even this fall, you know, or certainly in the winter months when we take our biggest groups.
What do you think of that happening, that there'll be some settlement there?
It's a really tough situation to predict right now. It does seem as though the government has physically gotten, you know, with their force of arms, been able to take control enough and broken down the roadblocks so that they're in control now of all the major areas. But there still is a lot of violence going on with these groups roving around, basically. And I mentioned when we were off the air to just a couple of nights ago, there were a couple of students, including a medical student. She happened to be from Brazil, but she could have been from anywhere, who was just shot because she happened to be out on the street in late afternoon, and this truck with these armed paramilitaries came down the street just shooting any young person because there had been protests in that area earlier, and they just decided to start shooting, and they shot and killed this young woman who was totally innocent. And there, so there's that kind of paranoia, you know, all over the country now happening, and for young people in particular. And there's been a lot of abductions of young people who they suspect were involved in the protests earlier. And Chris's son, he didn't say this, but I'm sure that's the kind of thing he's afraid of. You know, that just by being 17 and being in the wrong place, you're guilty. And so that's a big, big concern. And maybe it will hopefully settle down, but it's hard to say. You know, Ortega feels like he's bringing things under control, under his control. But my suspicion is there's a whole lot of people that aren't going to forget. And it may not yet be over.
And the leader, the president of the country, changed the Constitution. So he is president till
2021. Yeah, a number of years ago, what Chris was alluding to is Daniel Ortega was able to, you know, take control of the Electoral Commission, so they oversee how the votes count, who gets to vote, etc. They also took control of the Supreme Court. And the Nicaraguan Constitution had previously said you can't serve more than two terms, and he got them to change it to say that, well, the Constitution's unconstitutional, and Daniel should be allowed to run for a third term, which he did. And he did win the last election. But you know, a lot of opponents feel like it was rigged, and so they didn't even vote. So they actually did a boycott of the election, and so he won officially, overwhelmingly.
Ortega.
Correct.
Who was his predecessor?
Well, he was there. There was a period with several different presidents, but the big predecessor in the past was Somoza, was the dictator.
Somoza. Yeah.
Yeah. So Somoza was overthrown in 1979, and people may remember after that there was the Contra Warriors through the
1980s. Is that the Noriega era?
Well, Noriega was in Panama during that period, but okay. Yeah, there was a lot of unsettlement in all of Central America during that whole time, and the Contra War was a big part of it, and that's when the Sandinistas were in control in Ortega. And to his credit, Ortega left office when he was voted out in 1990, left peacefully, but was reelected then in 2004 and has since been, no, excuse me, 2008, and has now been in power this time and is serving till 2021. And his wife is the vice president, and so there's a lot of concern and suspicion that he's setting himself up to be, you know, for life, and or through his successors, and be like the Somozas before him, is the comparison that the critics make.
Sometimes I wonder, you know, you, I think, mentioned earlier the old thing about power corrupts, absolute power absolutely corrupts. You wonder why people think the way they do, like why they want to set themselves up and be so wealthy. And they can't live long enough to spend all of that money. And, you know, why would you want to hurt people so you can have a yacht? I don't know. I'm using pretty simple
comparisons. I think, you know, in fairness, I think that Ortega and the Sandinistas, and there are many, many very good people still in the Sandinista movement who have done a lot of good for people and want to do more good. But I think somewhere in that process, it became more about the man than it became you know, about some of the end goal, or they believe that through the man they would get to the end goals, and then somehow that always gets in the way, you know, and it's, you know, power corrupts, and as he has accumulated more and more power, you want to keep that power. And you're probably also telling yourself that, you know, you're going to do more good in that sense for that way, and that, you know, you have to maintain that power, or that they're, and not without reason, you know, the United States was trying to take him out of power during the 1980s. So he probably, you know, has continued to be fairly paranoid about that.
I read a book about that era, and holy cow, you talk about real, honest to God, cloak and dagger. I mean, it was really amazing what individuals and groups did during the Reagan administration in reference to that.
Right. Yeah, the Ollie North era.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You go, am I reading a fiction or is this a real? And it was a real story about what, you know.
Oh, it's true.
Planes and all these things and drugs.
Well, and drug trade. Yes. Yes. There was a good movie came out a couple of years ago, you know, Kill the Messenger. That actually was about some newspaper articles and a reporter who found links between the cocaine trade being brought to Los Angeles on planes that were, if not supplied by, or the CIA knew what was going on and was helping support it. And then the money was being funneled back to the Contra fighters, you know, and everybody justified that, too, in some way, that they thought they were doing good, I'm sure. But, yeah, it's ends justify means.
John Kerr, my guest, will take a break. We'll be right back. And I have a question to ask you right after this, these messages.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family-owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25-plus employees, and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service. And getting parts? Well, there's so much experience behind the parts counter, you'll be amazed. Our motto is, we sell fun. But every day, our mission is to help you from finding parts, getting service, or shopping for something new. And fun, too. Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Hi, I'm Alyssa, director at the Vital Link Adult Day Center on the Three Links campus. Our program is for adults requiring care during the day and includes nutritious home-cooked meals, stimulating group activities, as well as outings to local attractions. Vital Link provides support to caregivers during the day. Transportation is available. Please call me at 664-8865 to schedule a tour or find out more at threelinks.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's 11 before 11 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, 95.1 FM, the one, and of course, almost 50 years now, 1080 on your AM dial. John Kerr is my guest. John, I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask you. Number one, how did you stop that telephone from ringing so quickly? How did you do that?
A little button. Well, it's amazing.
I can't see where your phone is.
Oh, in my pocket. It was in my pocket, so I just knew if I pushed the button, it'll stop ringing.
Well, what button did you push? Is it an iPhone?
No, it's just my regular phone, but it's a little side button that, you know, has the volume, and if you press it fast, it stops.
Boy, you did that fast. I couldn't believe it. It went ding, ding, and boom, you just reached in and...
Yeah.
It would take five rings before I could figure out mine. And then, probably more importantly, what's the deal? Why should we care about Nicaragua's affairs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. Answering on several levels, I mean, you know, the history to me, of course, is the connection, I think, is always really important to know, the things that have gone in the past that have led to where we are. But even just looking forward, I think it's pretty obvious that as if things continue to be so bad in Nicaragua and get worse, the flood of people who are already trying to leave there will get worse too, and eventually that impacts us here. And I think it's a similar situation with a lot of these countries, and I think it's pretty easy to think that they're all coming here just because they're, you know, some kind of deadbeats, or they don't really aren't really trying to work things out in their country. And certainly that can happen too, I know. But I think most of these people are people who really would prefer to live in their own country in peace and have a chance. And if we can help them do that, I think we can save ourselves a lot of problems in this country too. And so I guess that's the biggest overall reason I think it's important to appreciate what's going on in places like Nicaragua. And that, you know, we can, I don't think we should be invading there or sending in troops or anything like that. But if there are other ways that we can let, people know that we care about what's going on in Nicaragua, and that there'll be impacts if somebody's doing something that's, you know, committing atrocities, whichever side they're on, that we're not going to put up with it from our end. We can have a lot of influence through sanctions or different economic means. That's going to cost us a lot less in the long run than it is if we let things go on and have to deal with the impacts later. And I think that's a general message that is probably true a lot of the world, but I know right now in Nicaragua, that's something that's going to happen. And there's a lot of Nicaraguans with U.S. connections already, and a lot of relatives here and friends. And so that's another good reason I think we need to be aware, because they're impacted too. And
is there a middle class in Nicaragua?
There is. It's, you know, relatively small. I mean, just, you know, in classic developing country sense, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's probably not more than 5 to 10% you'd consider real middle class. You know, and there's probably, you know, a 1% very wealthy, and the majority of the country is incredibly poor. You know, even though they've done better in recent years, they're still, Nicaragua was officially the second poorest country in the Americas, right after Haiti.
The beginning of our conversation, in reference to Chris Cruz, who was our guest the first hour, was the fact that retired senior citizens were being affected by the Social Security distribution. Right away, that kind of go, oh, they have Social Security in Nicaragua? That's good. And then the retailers and business people, manufacturers all, were hit with a 5% increase in their tax. And that was to go to help supplement the senior citizens, but it didn't go there. That's the bottom line.
That they're to bail out the program, yeah. You know, it was kind of a tip of the iceberg situation where there were a lot of grievances below the surface about the government and about corruption and about the power that they brought to themselves and keeping themselves and suppressing others. And so when they did that, when they had just announced this without any debate, without any real discussion whatsoever, it really upset both the people who were losing, these poor people who were older people who were losing their money, and then the business community was upset too because they weren't consulted on it, and they had generally gotten along with Ortega to that point. And then when there were protests against it, and there were these Sandinista supporting or government supported groups came in and sort of physically roughed up some of the senior citizens, it just sort of set off a chain reaction of all these different grievances and all these different issues, and massive protests started, and then there were shootings of people, snipers, etc., and it just kept getting worse and worse and led to a weird situation we have now.
Do you think the media has covered it enough? You mentioned that Fox News did a interview with mm-hmm. the president of Nicaragua. Do you think the media overall is covering what's going on in Nicaragua?
I think we could definitely use a lot more coverage, yes. You know, it's hard because there's so many things going on in the world right now. But I personally feel like a little more coverage of these kind of issues as opposed to, you know, who's having sexual relations with who at what particular time. And I'm not saying that's all unimportant, but it's, you know, we get plenty of that. But, you know, we have a real life and death situation going on for, you know, literally millions of people potentially, or for a whole country right in our backyard. And that's going to impact us an awful lot, too, if we don't pay more attention and know what's going on there.
We're going to take one final break, John, and then we'll be back and wrap it up. All right. John Kerr, my guest.
The Dakota County Fair is one of the biggest fairs in the state, and it's in your own backyard. This year, visit the Mobile 9/11 exhibit and see Freddie Justice, the planet's funniest hypnotist. There's live music, demolition derbies, 4-H displays, and a gigantic midway. Plus, your chance to win big at our new 7 Keys, 7 Days grand prize giveaway. See you at the Dakota County Fair in Farmington, August 6th through the 12th.
Hey there, it's me, your stomach, down here, you know, the one who can talk. Anyway, I was just at a yoga sesh with a few of the other stomachs, and mid tree pose, everyone started talking about Subway's new savory rotisserie-style chicken Caesar signature wrap. It's a mouthful to say, I know, but with creamy Caesar dressing and double the rotisserie-style chicken, it's not the only thing that's full, if you know what I mean. It's me, I'm the one that's full, because I'm a stomach, that's kind of what I do. Subway, make it what you want. Double meat based on average 6-inch sub.
Have you ever felt like your business has been tripped up by your bank? Friends in Bank and Trust understands how to be a financial resource for all types of small and large businesses and how to finance them. You might say that we are the best kept secret in business banking. Friends in Bank and Trust, the bank that comes to play.
Contact your local Friends in Bank and Trust office at friendsinbank.com. That's FRANDSEN bank.com.
Member FDIC.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
We're back on KYMN Radio. I have in studio a fellow by the name of John Kerr, and he is the CEO of a corporation or nonprofit, and there's great concern. Is there anything I can do, our listeners can do, to help the people that are being shot and killed on the streets of Nicaragua?
I think the biggest thing right now is to clearly pay attention and to probably urge our elected officials to be paying close attention to what's going on there. And as I said, I think a lot of you can just look at it from self-interest as being in the United States, that what happens there is going to impact us eventually. And I think the more that we're informed about what's going on, so people there know that we care too, I think it has ripple effects that can be beneficial, too.
And let's get to the book here, Mark Twain and the River of Timeless Temptation. Order yours now on Amazon. Is that true?
Yep, that's true.
How do you get a book on Amazon?
Well, you just have to go on and you can just, type in the book title or the author's name. Usually it will pop up pretty readily.
Do you have to pay to do that?
Not to get on, no. Obviously, you have to buy the book, but it's cheap.
You can sit down and say, "Hey, this is my book." Type it in, mm-hmm. and then anybody can be saying, "I want a Mark Twain book."
Yep.
And then yours will pop up with a bunch of others.
Sure. Yeah.
And then people can go down, click here, and they'll pay $6.99 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you get some of that money, and Amazon gets the rest.
Yep.
Or
how Jeff Bezos got so rich. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, how much, if somebody buys your book, how much do you get compared to Amazon?
Oh, gosh. I think it's maybe, well, actually, I get like 50%. It depends whether they get a digital version. You can read it on your computer or your little thing, or if you buy a print version. And you can make a bigger percentage off the digital, but it's a really small price, of course. The print you make, more money, but a smaller percentage because it costs more. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm clearly not doing this to get wealthy off of this book. And
Well, I've asked a lot of self-publishers, mm-hmm. and most of them will laugh when I ask this question. How many of these books do you have in your garage?
actually, the funny thing you're saying that I only have a few left in my garage. I mean, because I just can order them whenever I want a few more. So, yeah, I have more of some other books in my garage. But
this would be a quick read, wouldn't it?
Yeah, say, it's not a long book.
Like if you're going on a flight, let's say, from here to one of the coasts, you probably could read it before you land.
I hope it might take a little longer than that.
Wait a minute.
A long book.
Wait a minute. The print is a lot smaller than I thought. Okay, yeah. All right. And it's longer than a pocketbook.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, it probably you could read half of it and read half on the way back,
yeah,
depending
yeah.
on where you're going. So where are you going from here today? I mean, what does John Kerr do the rest of the week?
Well, I'm giving somebody a ride right after the show.
Well, thank
and
you.
And then I'm obviously we continue for interface service, to be active and trying to monitor and try to plan